Okay. All right, Clifford, we are back again. What are we doing today?
Today we have a special episode,
long overdue,
of backstory for an important plot point for a character who's been with us from almost the very beginning.
Yeah, when we first meet him?
Back in Bree.
Yeah. Okay, so where in Middle Earth did this extremely awesome strider, very well traveled, heir of Isildur, where did he come from? That is what we are going to get into tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Jump back to, you remember all like the Arnor stuff that we talked about? Do you remember King Arvedui?
Yeah, sounds a bit familiar.
Okay, what does Arvedui mean?
Arvedui was the last king of Arnor.
Yeah.
Which, if I recall, was the northern companion to Gondor.
Yeah. And then so, Arvedui, the name itself literally translates to last king.
Uh-huh. And was this the guy who died on the ice with the shipwreck up north?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And he had like two Palantir with him and stuff. And yeah, he had just met the Eskimo people. Yeah.
And just for a little bit more, zoomed out scope, Arnor and Gondor, both these kingdoms, direct descendants of the people, the Numenoreans, who came back to Middle-earth after Numenor was destroyed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And those people that go even further back are the descendants of all the men that helped in the Silmarillion. So like Beren's people, Turin and Hurin's people, and then that one Haleth lady's people. Mm-hmm. Those are the three tribes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then, yeah, but then with Arnor, it was actually declining for a while. Like it had actually broken into like three kingdoms, and then two of the kingdoms went evil, and then it was like, because like the one good king, or I don't know, lazy king, had broken up the kingdom between his three sons, and then there was infighting, and so it was on the decline for a while, and it was basically the Witch King that came to Angmar and led them to attack it.
Mm.
Okay, and so this was about the end of it, because now after Arvedui, the kings are no longer. His oldest son does survive. His oldest son is Arnarth. His oldest son's Arnarth. So he made it out, and that's kind of where we get all the rangers from. They keep the R naming tradition, the AR at the front, because that's got to be king. That has to be like the prefix for king.
Okay, you know? That makes sense. So the rangers are basically the dispossessed people of this kingdom. They're the kingly people lacking a kingdom, but still in the same territory where their kingdom would have been.
Still protecting it, as we know, because by the time of Lord of the Rings, it's the rangers that are guarding the Shire so that nothing invades it while Frodo sits there with the ring, right?
Right.
But anyways, fast forward down from the start of the rangers down to Arador, father of Arathorn, okay? Or Arathorn.
Okay.
Arador or Arathor? I guess we say like soft A, right? Usually?
True. Arador, father of Arathorn. Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, it's pretty, basically the names we know really well that we were taught, just soft A, we do that, but other ones we do kind of the R, pirate R.
Old fashioned.
Right? So Arathorn, which is one that we know, he marries this woman named Gilrain the Fair. Do we want to say Rain or do we want to say Gilren?
I think Gilrain makes sense.
Okay, Gilrain. Okay, Gilrain the Fair. But the father-in-law, he opposes it because Gilrain's too young by Dunedain standards, right? Mm. Because like they have the weird lifespans and everything, right? Mm-hmm. But the mother-in-law prophetically says, hold on, don't hinder it, because the days are darkening before the storm, and great things are to come. If these two wed now, hope may be born for our people. But if they delay, it will not come while this age lasts. Okay, so what happens?
Right after they get married, the father, Arador, who was opposed to the marriage, gets killed by trolls.
No. Arador was fine with the marriage. It's Gilrain's parents that were unfine with the marriage.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, that's the in-laws.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, okay. Part. Okay, so right after they get married, Arador, who's Arathorn's father, gets killed by trolls somewhere near Rivendell.
Yep.
As a result, Arathorn becomes chief of the Dunedain.
Right. And what happens?
Arathorn and Gilrain have a son named Aragorn.
Excellent. Okay, so this is Aragorn's, you know, go through all the rangers, you get up to Isildur, but anyways, Arathorn and Arador are his father and grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. But when Aragorn's just 2 years old, Arathorn was fighting some orcs with the Sons of Elrond, and he gets shot in the eye by an orc arrow, and he's dead, okay? So the mom-in-law was totally right. If they had pushed off this marriage by a couple years, Arador would be dead, and Arathorn would be dead before they gave birth to Aragorn or got married.
So the whole line of the Dunedain would be destroyed or
I would
or
say
ended.
direct line would be.
Okay.
Like father to oldest son would be. He still has a bunch of cousins because all the ones that showed up at Minas Tirith, those are his cousins.
Okay.
Or distant relations, right? But anyways, Gilrain and Aragorn then, they move to Rivendell and Elrond becomes a foster father for Aragorn. Also, that orc arrow getting shot in the eye with the orc arrow, that starts to remind me of Hewer's death, who is the brother of Hurin. And Hewer's son is Tuor, who was the one that in Gondolin and stuff. But anyways, like, there's a bunch of Silmarillion references with this story tonight. It's like, and they're all intentional. Tolkien's part, obviously. But I mean, it's, yeah, and we'll get into that a little bit why. But then Elrond here, he sounds like, yeah, another one. Elrond sounds like Thingol being the foster father to Turin, because Hurin in the Battle of a Number of Tears in the Silmarillion, his brother Hewer got shot in the eye. He's taken alive after he kills 70 orcs at once in a last stand so that the other elves can retreat to Gondolin. And then that's how he gets cursed by Morgoth to watch all his kids have, like, kind of ill-fated lives. And so that's how you get the story of Turin Turumbar, you know, and he ends up, like, he kills the dragon, but he also ends up accidentally marrying his sister, who he only never actually met because he left before she was born and stuff. And so, anyways, in that story, Turin, after his dad didn't come back from the battle, was sent to King Thingol, who was the dad of Lúthien, like Brynn and Lúthien, you know, and so he became a foster father to him too. So kind of like this with Elrond and Aragorn, except Elrond and Aragorn are both much more upstanding personalities than Thingol and Turin, who were both very fiery and confrontational. What do we say next?
Elrond and Estelle hope.
Oh, no. You just say it. I'm giving
you... Sorry. Okay. So Elrond, who's kind of Aragorn's foster father now, takes to calling him Estelle, which is hope.
Right. And where have we seen this before?
This comes from Finrod and Andrith. Who did they call hope? Their child?
That was the word for hope that they used, and it wasn't just like your man, I hope I do well on this test. It was more like a cosmic proportions kind of hope.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know?
This is from the conversation they have kind of about mortality and men and elves and what lies in the world beyond.
Yeah. And they almost figured Iluvatar might take bodily form.
Right.
To set everything straight, which is, you know, I don't know. It was quite the scoping conversation, quite the special episode. Everybody should check it out. But yeah. So anyways, yeah, so Aragorn, he's not going to go by Aragorn. Why do they give him this other name besides the Tolkien loves names and everybody has multiple names?
Yeah, I mean, Aragorn's up to like, what, five or six names at this point?
Well, why this one specifically?
Besides this one sounds like because they didn't, basically to conceal his identity. That it wouldn't be obvious to the enemy that the heir of Isildur is still around and growing up and being trained and all that.
Yeah. And then maybe they just like the name Estel, like how people like certain names now without knowing what they mean. But of course, it's not at all coincidental that Hope, you know, this cosmic Hope, that's the name, one of the names that Aragorn gets, is he's the one that's basically going to hopefully reunite all men like under one banner, right? You know? And also, fun note, Aragorn would have been 10 years old when Bilbo and the dwarves showed up on their way to the Lonely Mountain. And he would have been living in Rivendell. So Bilbo might have met him when he was 10. Eventually, they do become good friends, as we saw when Frodo made it to Rivendell in Fellowship of the Ring. But
interesting.
Yeah. Also, good on the Hobbit movies not to just shoehorn in the 10-year-old kid. But like, Legolas made a lot of sense, because Legolas probably really was at that Lonely Mountain battle. Uh-huh. But to have Aragorn running around would have just been, all right, this is a stretch. We don't need this. But they didn't do that. All right. So, first quote of the night here. You want to take it? You want to start?
Sure. But when Estel was only 20 years of age, it chanced that he returned to Rivendell after great deeds in the company of the sons of Elrond. And Elrond looked at him and was pleased, for he saw that he was fair and noble and early come to manhood, though he would yet become greater in body and in mind. That day, therefore, Elrond called him by his true name, and told him who he was and whose son, and he delivered to him the heirlooms of his house. "Here is the ring of Barahir," he said, "the token of our kinship from afar, and here also are the shards of Narsil. With these you may yet do great deeds, for I foretell that the span of your life shall be greater than the measure of men, unless evil befalls you or you fail the test. But the test will be hard and long. The scepter of Anu Minas I withhold, for you have yet to earn it."
All right, what do we think of that?
First of all, I feel like that if Aragorn actually knew nothing about his background, to find out.
Well, he had to know that Elrond wasn't his dad.
Yeah, okay. He maybe knew that much, but to find this out is a big deal, no matter what age. And then if he's already 20, it feels like it probably could have come as a pretty emotional, dramatic shock. But
I think it does, but I don't want to touch on that just yet. But
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And then, yeah, critically, he gets these physical tokens that basically, how do I put it? Clearly, Aragorn's significance lies in like his own person, but the physical things that go along with his title are very critical. And as in a lot of the Tolkien stuff, they symbolize a lot, even if they're like the actual materialness of them is not ultimately critical.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's go through them.
Okay, the Ring of Barahir. I've heard of this before. I know it's not the ring that we care about from Lord of the Rings, but
correct.
Is this one of the Elvish rings?
It's not one of the three Elvish rings, no.
Okay.
It is an Elvish ring, but who is Barahir?
I can't remember.
Right, so he's Beren's dad.
Okay.
Okay. So you remember that, right?
Yeah. That's way back. But in theory, a very ancient descendant of Aragorn, or a forefather of Aragorn.
Yeah, other way around. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so Barahir, in one of the battles with Morgoth in the Silmarillion, he saves Finrond Felagund, who's one of the Noldor princes. Mm-hmm. He saves him in battle, and so then Finrod gives him this ring and says, "Take this as like a token of friendship, and pass it on to like your family or whatever, because I will answer your call for you guys saving me like this. Like this was such a heroic feat. I'm totally indebted to you." Yeah. So
even though Barahir was a man, right?
And right, right.
Finrod was a
elf. Yeah.
Was an elf. So I feel like that alone is symbolic of this connection that Aragorn is somehow kind of uniting the power of men and elves together.
Right. And so Bear here gets killed, and Beren goes and kills all the orcs that killed his dad and takes the ring with him. And then he goes to Finrod and says, hey, I need help stealing a Silmaril so that I can give it as a dowry to marry this girl. And so Finrod then has to say, all right, fine, I guess I gotta help. And then they end up in that's when they get captured by Sauron, and it's kind of like the Battle of the Band scene, if you remember back when. And then, anyways, in that dungeon, Finrod ends up getting killed, saving Beren from like a werewolf that was about to eat him. But yeah, so anyways, from Beren, it passed down to his heirs, which would be Dior to Elwing to Elrond and Elros, but obviously it must have gone to Elros since Elrond doesn't have it, because it did go through the Numenorean line of kings, but then it went to a lesser house that went down to Elendil, that went down to Isildur, that went down through all the Arnor people to Aragorn here. So,
kind of confusing. So the ring passed through Elrond's hands previously, generations of men before?
He saw his brother have it.
Okay.
Because his brother Elros chose to be the man, and he was the first king in Numenor.
I see. Okay. And then, So it didn't go through Elrond's hands, but he's so old that he saw part of its lineage many, many generations back, and now it's made its way all the way through the Numenoreans down to Aragorn.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Shards and Arsyl, that one's easy.
Yeah. The sword that has been broken will be reforged, right?
Hasn't been reforged yet.
No. But we know this from Lord of the Rings. We've talked about this already.
When did it get reforged in Lord of the Rings?
Right before the Fellowship set off, right?
Yeah. Different than the movie, of course, but yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what's the Scepter of Anumesis?
This one, I don't know. I feel like it has to do something with the ruling power of Gondor, or of Numenor, and then Gondor.
Neither of those. So this is, so Anumenis was the capital of Arnor. So the scepter must have been some sort of leadership symbol for that kingdom. So, anyways, Aragorn doesn't get that one yet from Elrond.
Okay. In other words, like the first two are more like family heirlooms. The scepter of Anumenis might be more of a political heirloom that Aragorn hasn't fully assumed the title of yet or something.
Well, there is no Arnor kingdom right now either. I think that's the bigger thing, maybe. Okay. It is kind of questionable, like, why is Elrond think he's entitled to hold these things? But
he's Elrond. We're not going to question it.
Well, yeah, he has been keeping them safe for them for 3,000 years, so they could actually just kind of thank him and go with it. But anyways, he also implies that this isn't, you know, he's going to get it when he passes some sort of test. Do we know what the test is yet?
We don't know, but I could speculate that it's either rejecting the ring of Lord of the Rings or assuming the throne of Gondor.
Pretty close. Maybe right on it. We'll have to see exactly, because it's not explicitly said, I don't think. The next day, at the hour of sunset, Aragorn walked alone in the woods, and his heart was high within him, and he sang, for he was full of hope, and the world was fair. And suddenly, even as he sang, he saw a maiden walking on a green sward among the white stems of the birches, and he halted amazed, thinking that he had strayed into a dream, or else that he had received the gift of the elf minstrels, who can make the things of which they sing appear before the eyes of those that listen. For Aragorn had been singing a part of the Lay of Lúthien, which tells of the meeting of Lúthien and Beren in the forest of Neldoreth. And behold, there Lúthien walked before his eyes in Rivendell, clad in a mantle of silver and blue, fair as the twilight in elven home. Her dark hair strayed in a sudden wind, and her brows were bound with gems like stars. For a moment Aragorn gazed in silence, but fearing that she would pass away and never be seen again, He called to her, crying, "Tenuvial, Tenuvial," even as Beren had done in the elder days long ago. Then the maiden turned to him and smiled, and she said,
"Who are you, and why do you call me by that name?"
And he answered, "Because I believed you to be indeed Luthien Tenuvial, of whom I was singing. But if you are not she, then you walk in her likeness."
"So many have said," she answered gravely, "yet her name is not mine, though maybe my doom will not be unlike hers. But who are you?"
"Estil, I am called," he said, "but I am Aragorn, Arathorn's son, Isildur's heir, lord of the Dúnedain." Yet even in the saying, he felt that this high lineage, in which his heart had rejoiced, was now of little worth, and as nothing compared to her dignity and loveliness.
But she laughed merrily and said, "Then we are akin from afar, for I am Arwen, Elrond's daughter, and am named also Undúmiel."
"Often is it seen," said Aragorn, "that in dangerous days men hide their chief treasure. Yet I marvel at Elrond and your brothers, for though I have dwelt in this house from childhood, I had heard no word of you. How come it that we have never met before? Surely your father has not kept you locked in his hoard." All right. So what do we think of that one?
Okay, so clearly this is a love at first sight
for
two critical characters crossing paths in some perfectly beautiful forest setting. But what's
as
crazy
he was singing,
is that,
as he was singing about the best love story in Middle Earth history too,
yes,
at the exact same yes. time, and they exactly. they're basically like recasting it, you know. But the yeah, but go on, sorry.
But what's totally crazy is Elrond has been Aragorn's foster father since mm-hmm. he was basically 2 years old, right? And he's 20 now.
Yeah.
Arwen is Elrond's daughter, and somehow they've never met, crossed paths, or heard of each other.
Yep.
Kind of crazy if you think about it.
I mean, I think it's like Tolkien might have actually meant that to be straight comical. I think, you know. But okay. Anyways, I don't know if we're going to read it, but it's revealed she was, it's revealed she was living with, in Lothlorien. So she was living with because that's where Elrond's wife was originally from, because his wife is the daughter of Galadriel and Celeborn. And so Arwen was visiting her grandparents there for, you know, years on end. Because that's the thing, it's like, these are elves, so 20 years that Aragorn's been living here, that's nothing for an elf. I mean, I guess that could... Yeah, I guess your daughter doesn't have to come up in conversation for 20 years. But, I don't know, probably hard for us to wrap our heads around, but maybe elves can do it, you know, who knows. Uh-huh. But the mom... We've talked about this at some point. The mom is... So Elrond's wife, Arwen's mom, she's no longer... in Middle Earth anymore, because she was passing over the Misty Mountains once, and she was attacked by all sorts of orcs. And so the two sons of Elrond saved her, but then she was like so on the gravely injured on the verge of death that she just went across the sea to get healed up in Valinor. But you know, she can't come back. So that's where the Elrond's wife has been missing at the whole time. You know, back to Aragorn and Arwen.
Mm-hmm.
Tolkien's kind of famously said that this whole section that we're doing as a special
mm-hmm.
was meant to be in the story somewhere, but he just literally couldn't figure out how to work it in, so it just had to stay in the appendix.
Mm.
But anyways, that's definitely why we're doing a full special of it.
That's an interesting bit, because I feel like that's a lot of people are aware that this something along these lines is in the movies, right? But
yeah.
It doesn't show up in the books. But
yeah.
It's interesting that Tolkien noted that he thought it should have been in the books.
Well, we've also said too, especially since I'm like editing those episodes now, but like the Aragorn and Eowyn not romance and stuff, it's like, I think one of your critiques at least was like, it would have been nice if there was more like genuine romance in this.
Right, right.
I don't know. So it is kind of here. Then again, it's like, for Aragorn, it's love at first sight, so it's not like it's super sophisticated or...
And notably, this is happening timeline-wise in between The Hobbit and the start of Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
It's a little bit out of sync with the stories from The Hobbit's perspective that we've been seeing.
Yeah, or even to have like Aragorn do some sweeping backstory thing in one of the chapters is like, I don't know how you would set that out. Like when he talks to Legolas and Gimli on, I don't know, when they're going to get the ghosts or something. I don't know. You know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so last thing though, Aragorn's lineage goes all the way up to Arendil. Arwen goes to Elrond, who's the son of Arendil. So...
Arendil and Elendil, right? Different.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Arendil is the one that had the Silmaril, was in the boat.
Right, right.
But anyways, this means that, like, she said it herself, but kin from afar. So this is kind of, it's kind of weird. It's like, she's like a 40 generations great aunt twice removed. Of Aragorn's.
Okay.
So, just an FYI, in case anybody's ever wondering or never made that connection. But yeah, it's kind of goofy and weird, but it's the way it works because she's an elf, he's a man. But yeah.
Right.
Oh, wait. All right, sorry. And then here's the last thing, too. This happened the very next day after Elrond had just told Aragorn about his lineage. Very next day, right? So I thought it was actually kind of a crucial line where... what did Aragorn or the narrator say about Aragorn? Aragorn introduces himself as Estil because that's still his old name, right? Mm-hmm. And then he also says, "Well, I'm also Aragorn, Isildur's heir, you know." And so, like for a day, he got to be really proud of that. Possibly even feel like hot shit, you know, mm-hmm. as like a 20-year-old mm-hmm. badass, right? But then. That was for one day, and then all of a sudden he says, yet even in saying that, he felt that his high lineage, in which his heart had rejoiced, was now of little worth and has nothing compared to her in dignity and loveliness, okay? So I feel like this might actually be where Aragorn kind of gets his humility, is that the love of his life is one of the few people in the world that are of higher lineage than him.
Uh-huh. And he's courting her and doesn't really have, he can't say anything about it.
Right. So I think that is significant to Aragorn's character to keep him humble, down to earth, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Aragorn, he brings this up to his mom, or actually the mom. Motherly instinct can tell something's up with Aragorn after like a couple days. So Aragorn talks to her and it's like, sounds like a awkward teenager talking about a crush thing. And the mom even says, "Oh, dude, you set your sights too high. Like this is like anybody else, you'd probably be set." But not so much here. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, it sounds like he's fallen in love with maybe the one of the few characters in Middle Earth that are like actually hard for him to get.
Yeah. Right. And so like the mom says that, but Aragorn rebuts that, well, you know, my ancestor, apparently Beren, you know, he aimed really high and it did work out for him. So, I mean, it's been done before and I am like, you know, I have his genes and his blood.
Mm-hmm. Actually, one other important thing I feel like that we're even brushing over because of the specifics is the fact that Aragorn is a man and Arwen is an elf. Even though at this point we've now come across a few crossover relationships like that, they're super rare.
Right, and the most famous one, though, is Beren and Lúthien, which is what he's bringing up and stuff. But yeah, so there's Beren and Lúthien. There's, what else? What's the other one?
Elros and...
No, Elros chose to be a man.
Not because of a love interest?
No, not because of a love interest. The other one was Tur and Idril in Gondor.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's that weird quasi-half-one, or, you know, like, it's not high-ranking because it wasn't a high-ranking elf, but supposedly the Dol Amroth people, like the Prince Imrahil, like he doesn't have a beard and nobody in Dol Amroth does because like they think there was a minor wedding of man and lesser elf.
That flew under the radar for a couple of generations.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So point being, this whole elf man crossover is exceedingly rare and almost never happens. So it's a big deal, regardless of Aragorn and Arwen's stature, to be thinking of something like this. And then the fact that Arwen is as important and kind of high status as she is makes it even more improbable that they could ever be together.
Yeah. So, and that was the thing too with Beren and Luthien. Luthien was, well, the kind of the way they're describing Arwen here, but then maybe even more so, just, you know, amplify everything. And Thingol, the dad, was just, he was, at that point, he was basically racist against men because he just thought they were inferior. So, like, you know, literally racist. And then also, like, totally, what's the word, xenophobe. Like, didn't like any sort of outsiders or anything. So he was very appalled when Beren and Luthien said, yeah, we want to get married. And he said, okay, yeah, the dowry is a Silmaril, like, because this is never going to happen. and then that's what led their whole story to happen, was that the two of them together worked to get the Silmaril. And somehow they do, which is the craziest thing in the world if you know anything about the Silmarils. Like the first time you ever read the Silmarillion, you read it and you're like, what? They actually did it? This is nuts, you know? But the mom says, probably not so much to the Thingol extent, but in this matter, you know, Elrond, he's been nice to you for the past 20 years. He's been a foster father, but he's not going to play too nice in the matter of who his daughter marries. And what's Aragorn's overdramatic line?
Then bitter will my days be, and I will walk in the wild alone.
The mom says, yep, you will. In a very prophetic way. Because that actually, well, he does actually walk in the wild alone, you know, as we're about to find out.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. But he does confront Elrond about all this. So I want to take this conversation in full. Why don't you start? Because I think Elrond starts it.
But Elrond saw many things and read many hearts. One day, therefore, before the fall of the year, he called Aragorn to his chamber, and he said, Aragorn, Arathorn's son, Lord of the Dunedain, listen to me. A great doom awaits you, either to rise above the height of all your fathers since the days of Elendil, or to fall into darkness with all that is left of your kin. Many years of trial lie before you. You shall neither have a wife, nor bind any woman to you in troth, until your time comes and you are found worthy of it.
Then Aragorn was troubled, and he said, can it be that my mother has spoken of this?
No, indeed, said Elrond. Your own eyes have betrayed you. But I do not speak of my daughter alone. You shall be betrothed to no man's child as yet. But as for Arwen the Fair, Lady of Imladris and of Lorien, even star of her people, she is of lineage greater than yours, and she has lived in the world already so long that to her you are but as a yearling shoot beside a young birch of many summers. She is too far above you. And so, I think, it may well seem to her. But even if it were not so, and her heart turned towards you, I should still be grieved because of the doom that is laid on us.
What is that doom? Said Aragorn.
That so long as I abide here, she shall live with the youth of the Eldar, answered Elrond. And when I depart, she shall go with me, if she so chooses.
I see, said Aragorn, that I have turned my eyes to a treasure no less dear than the treasure of Thingol that Beren once desired. Such is my fate. Then suddenly the foresight of his kindred came to him, and he said, But lo, Master Elrond, the years of your abiding run short at last, and the choice must soon be laid on your children, to part either with you or with Middle-earth.
Truly, said Elrond, soon, as we account it, though many years of men must still pass. But there will be no choice before Arwen, my beloved, unless you, Aragorn, Arathorn's son, come between us and bring one of us, you or me, to a bitter parting beyond the end of the world. You do not know yet what you desire of me. He sighed, and after a while, looking gravely upon the young man, he said again, The years will bring what they will. We will speak no more of this until many have passed. The days darken, and much evil is to come.
Ooh, all right. Okay, so how did you read Elrond in this conversation? Was he like cold or confrontational, or was he still kind of fatherly and just telling difficult news? The son,
a little bit more the latter. I super practical almost.
Yeah,
like he didn't seem too cold in telling Aragorn you don't have a chance. It was more like you don't have a chance. It's not anything against you. It's just the nature of things. And like, he kind of puts the personal aspect, that the fact that it's his daughter, Arwen, in question, that Aragorn loves, aside. And he's basically telling Aragorn, it doesn't matter who it is. You're not even allowed to be with anyone for years on end after you finish some of these trials that go unmentioned.
Yeah.
We kind of know as the reader what this involves.
Yeah. I would say it was more serious. Like he says, Aragorn's son. It's like, oh, you've been my foster dad for 20 years, but now you're saying my real dad's name. You're saying a great doom awaits you, either to rise above the height of all your fathers since the days of Elendil, or to fall into darkness with all that is left of your kin. So it's like, okay, laying it out there. crunch time, serious.
Right after that, you shall neither have wife nor bind any woman to you in troth until your time comes and you are found worthy of it. That's like a very passive statement, implying like it's not Elrond's, me, deciding that I'm going to find you worthy to marry my daughter or some other woman. It's like you will be found worthy of it by some unspoken higher power or something like that. Mm-hmm. And when your time comes, in other words, it's like there are things going on out of both of our control,
right,
that stand in the way of this.
Right. And then there was the Thingol reference to Beren and Lúthien, but we already kind of talked about that, so no need to keep beating up on that.
Aragorn's just like, come on.
I think he's more, what's the word? Resigned, loyal and depressed, but understands. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets it, you know? Like, there isn't too much friction with all this, right?
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so let's see. Back to that rise above heights of all your fathers since the days of Elendil. What's the one thing that Elendil did that nobody else has ever done? Maybe technically Isildur did it, but nobody else has done.
Defeated Sauron?
Not really, because Isildur cut the ring after Elendil had gotten killed.
Okay.
Elendil was the only one that was High King of both Gondor and Arnor. So Isildur might have been it, but he never really went back to rule it. And then he also gave Gondor away to his nephew to just kind of be its own separate thing almost. But when Elendil was king, though he had barely spent any time in Gondor, he was technically the High King of both. So that's what Elrond's kind of laying out to Aragorn here a little bit, or at least hinting at. So the very next day after this, Aragorn sets out on his personal exile, kind of crossing the threshold step of the hero's journey, right? He goes into the wild, works against Sauron for 30 years. Obviously without revealing himself, because that doesn't happen until the plant here at Helm's Deep, right? He ends up befriending... You want to take it?
Gandalf the Wise, for whom he gained much wisdom. With him, he made many perilous journeys, but as the years wore on, he went more often alone. His days were hard and long, and he became somewhat grim to look upon, unless he chanced to smile. And yet he seemed to men worthy of honor, as a king that is in exile, when he did not hide his true shape. For he went in many guises, and won renown under many names. He rode in the host of the Rohirrim, and fought for the Lord of Gondor by the land and by sea. And then in the hour of victory he passed out of the knowledge of men of the west, and went alone far into the east and deep into the south, exploring the hearts of men, both evil and good, and uncovering the plots and devices of the servants of Sauron.
Okay, so... That's a lot right there, and that seems brief, even though this is the Aragorn special. Like, come on, we should get more than that, right?
Yeah, a single sentence.
No, don't worry, we do. Because what we have yet to read, though we've covered much of Appendix A, when we did the Gondor section, we stopped through partially of the way through the stewards. If you go back to Appendix A you now, after reading what we just read, you can now start to connect the dots about this one mysterious man who appeared in the reign of Ecthelion II, who was the father of Denethor, grandfather of Boromir and Faramir. So let me start this, and then you might just take over. It's page 1030. Okay. Ecthelion II, son of Turgon, was a man of wisdom. With what power was left to him, he began to strengthen his realm against the assault of Mordor. He encouraged all men of worth from near and far to enter his service, and to those who proved trustworthy, he gave rank and reward. In much that he did, he had the aid and advice of a great captain whom he loved above all. Thorongil, men called him in Gondor, the Eagle of the Star, for he was swift and keen-eyed, and wore a silver star upon his cloak. But no one knew his true name, nor in what land he was born. He came to Ecthelion from Rohan, where he had served the king Thengol, but he was not one of the Rohirrim. He was a great leader of men, by land or by sea, but he departed into the shadows whence he came, before the days of Ecthelion were ended.
Thorongil often counseled Ecthelion that the strength of the rebels in Umbar was a great peril to Gondor, and a threat to the fiefs of the south that would prove deadly if Sauron moved to open war. At last he got leave of the steward and gathered a small fleet, and he came to Umbar unlooked for by night, and there burned a great part of the ships of the corsairs. He himself overthrew the captain of the haven in battle upon the quays, and then he withdrew his fleet with small loss. But when they came back to Pelargir, to men's grief and wonder, he would not turn to Minas Tirith, where great honor awaited him. He sent a message of farewell to Ecthelion, saying, "Other tasks now call me, Lord, and much time and many perils must pass, ere I come again to Gondor, if that be my fate." Though none could guess what those tasks might be, nor what summons he had received, it was known whither he went, for he took boat and crossed over Anduin, and there he said farewell to his companions and went on alone. And when he was last seen, his face was towards the Mountains of Shadow.
There was dismay in the city at the departure of Thorongil, and to all the men it seemed a great loss, unless it were to Denethor, the son of Ecthelion, a man now ripe for the stewardship, to which, after 4 years, he succeeded on the death of his father. Denethor II was a proud man, tall, valiant, and more kingly than any man that had appeared in Gondor for many lives of men, and he was wise also, and far-sighted, and learned in lore. Indeed, he was as like to Thorongil as to one of nearest kin, and yet was ever placed second to the stranger in the hearts of men in the esteem of his father. At the time, many thought that Thorongil had departed before his rival became his master, though indeed Thorongil had never himself vied with Denethor, nor held himself higher than the servant of his father. And in one matter only were their counsels to the steward at variance. Thorongil often warned Ecthelion not to put trust in Saruman the White and Isengard, but to welcome rather Gandalf the Grey. But there was little love between Denethor and Gandalf, and after the days of Ecthelion, there was less welcome for the Grey Pilgrim in Minas Tirith. Therefore, later, when all was made clear, many believed that Denethor, who was subtle in mind and looked further and deeper than other men of his day, had discovered who the stranger Thorongil in trust was, and suspected that he and Mithrandir designed to supplant him. All right. Did that quench your knowledge for backstory?
Yeah, in a big way. I never would have picked up on that had you not pointed that out, but that's a pretty clever thing woven in. So one of the many identities, I was kind of joking about Aragorn having all these official names.
Mm-hmm.
Aragorn, Strider, Ethel, whatever, all his titles. But it Elysir. Seems like, yeah, Elysir. He actually was kind of disappearing, reappearing, showing up with many different personalities and faces and characters across a pretty long period of time.
Right.
And in this case, it almost sounds like a superhero story or something like that, where he's like this kind of like thankless hero.
Yeah.
Defending the kingdom in the background.
Definitely Batman vibes, you're right.
Yeah. Like everybody looks up to them, but they don't really know who he is and he disappears.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't know. When we did the House is the Healing chapter, technically that was the first time in the books that Aragorn had walked into Minas Tirith after he had, made a big deal that he was not going to go in, right? and so he went in disguise, but it's like, I don't know. You read that chapter and it's like, he's kind of you don't really know, and maybe you don't think about it, but it kind of seems like he's been here before, right? It's like, well, he has. You know, he came in disguise as the Thrawnguil guy. There's even lines in that passage itself that are, like, pretty smart, where he's saying, like, Ecthelion said, he encouraged all men of worth from far or near to enter his service, you know, and those who proved trustworthy, he gave rank and reward. So it's like, all right, so those are the conditions that some nobody from who knows where can just rise up if they're loyal and they're, you know, capable, right? So he had the conditions for success to move up, and it wasn't even success that he was looking for. He was just trying to defend the place that should rightfully be his kingdom, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was crucial because he said, hey, we got to go after Umbar. We cannot have these guys hurting us on the coast while Mordor attacks us by land. And fast forward to Lord of the Rings, well, Denethor kind of let that slip, and it was Aragorn that had to correct it again because they were attacking. But, you know, in this situation, he went all the way down to Umbar and kind of, like, conquered a fleet right outside that city, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then he leaves to go, like, towards the Mountains of Shadow or something, which is, like, the borders of Mordor. Craziest of all, though, was Denethor.
Yeah. Denethor guessing what was going on.
Right. So we couldn't reveal it in the Denethor Pyre chapter, or maybe I should have revealed it there. But anyways, we didn't. But it's like, so this is another factor in his decision for suicide was he knows who Aragorn is. All right. Mm-hmm. He's put this together over years and years. He's got this Palantir to help him. It's like he figured it out. So, like, when they said, like, there's some ranger, his name's Aragorn and stuff, he's like, I know who this is. This is Thrawnguil returning again, and he's going to outdo me again for the upteenth time. I can't stand it, you know? So, I don't know. Crazy, crazy little twist weave in Appendix A. Yeah. Oh, also, they mentioned he rode in Rohan with Thengel. Thengel is Théoden's dad. All right, so Aragorn's older than Théoden, just FYI, which is kind of weird because Théoden was 70 and old, and
yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, this whole idea like of Aragorn outlasting all the regular time frames feels... We only see that with the elves normally. Like, it's very foreign to the rest of the story, but it makes sense from what we know about the Numenoreans.
Right. So they all had their, just to recap, they had their lifespans times by three. So, like, if the normal guy lived to 100, Numenoreans lived to 300.
Mm.
But if it was more like 80, then whatever, 240, I don't know, you know, do the math. But it was lessening each generation as they married non-Numenorean blood, like just regular men blood. But the purest bloodline of all was those northern rangers because they had, like, enough kin around. So if anybody was going to live long, yes, their lifespans had shortened, but they weren't as bad as, like, the Gondor ones where they were basically by this time in Lord of the Rings, the Gondor lifespans are just normal.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much for Aragorn. Back to this Aragorn account after, you know, that included even attacking Umbar, craziest, or, well, I don't know, the Denethor part was the craziest, but... Thus he became at last the most hardy of living men, skilled in their crafts and lore, and was yet more than they, for he was elven-wise, and there was light in his eyes that when they were kindled, few could endure. His face was sad and stern because of the doom that was laid on him, and yet hope dwelt ever in the depths of his heart, from which mirth would arise at times like a spring from a rock. All right, pretty cool.
That's a flex.
Hey, so this is going to go out after the 9th episode. So after they had the last debate before they go to the Black Gate.
Okay.
But did you recognize his eyes, the eyes reference? I'm giving you a hint where it would come up. Came up after the 9th chapter.
When he, let's see, he's... Spies.
No, not spies. Not spies.
He sees the Nazgul.
No. When they were kindled, few could endure.
Oh, okay. The messenger.
The stare down. He wins the staring contest. okay. Anyways, when Aragorn's 49 and tired of traveling, he enters Lothlorien. This is the first time he's ever gone to Lothlorien, but he enters in, and he doesn't know that Arwen is also visiting at this time, and the only change to her for the past 30 years is that she looks more grave, sensing some the impending doom for herself, for the elves, and for all of Middle-earth at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Galadriel dresses up Aragorn in some nice clothing. You know, maybe she's trying to play some matchmaker games, but you want to take
Then more than any kind of men he appeared and seemed rather an elf lord from the Isles of the West, and thus it was that Arwen first beheld him again after their long parting, and as he came walking towards her under the trees of Caras Galadon laden with flowers of gold, her choice was made and her doom appointed. Then for a season they wandered together in the glades of Lothlorien, until it was time for him to depart. And on the evening of the midsummer, Aragorn, Arathorn's son, and Arwen, daughter of Elrond, went to the fair hill, Cairn Amroth, in the midst of the land, and they walked unshod on the dying grass with Elenor and Nifredil about their feet. And there upon that hill they looked east to the shadow and west to the twilight, and they plighted their troth and were glad. And Arwen said, "Dark is the shadow, and yet my heart rejoices, for you, Estelle, shall be among the great whose valor will destroy it."
But Aragorn answered, "Alas, I cannot foresee it, and how it may come to pass is hidden from me. Yet with your hope I will hope, and the shadow I utterly reject. But neither, lady, is the twilight for me, for I am immortal. And if you will cleave to me, Evestar, then the twilight you must also renounce." All right, so they fell in love, but what's the bigger deal at the end there?
That's... basically, Arwen has to make her choice. She has to choose if she's going to keep being an elf, right? Who's going to sail into the twilight, live forever, right, but also live forever slash go to Valinor. Or her, what I think they refer to, what she calls her doom, choose to be mortal, remain in Middle-earth with Aragorn.
Which is highly reminiscent of Beren and Lúthien, because that's what Lúthien ends up doing. Well, so in that story, Beren actually died, and then Lúthien begged for his life back, and she said, "Yeah, I'll become mortal too, so long as I get to marry him." And so then they both became mortal, and they both got like a second life, and then, but they, you know, they only had the one lifetime together, as opposed to the elves who were used to immortality, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, meeting in a second meeting like this, that was also reminiscent of Beren and Lúthien, because it was love at first sight for Beren, but Lúthien needed some time, like basically like a whole season in the wandering around the forest and him like seeing her, and then she warmed up to the idea. Other cool thing here, the Cairn Amroth, that's the hill that was at the end of the first Lothlorien chapter where Frodo goes and stands up on top of it with Haldir, and they see the city, the tree city, from a big view of that and stuff. And then he looks down and he sees Aragorn, and Aragorn's having a kingly moment. And what he was staring at was one of the flowers here, because he was remembering this moment.
Mm.
So, yeah, mm-hmm. just pretty cool connecting all sorts of loose strands and everything. But yeah, pretty sweet. Okay, we're almost done here, though, for tonight. And she stood then still as a white tree, looking into the west, and at last she said,
"I will cleave to you, Dúnedain, and turn from the twilight. Yet there lies the land of my people and the long home of all my kin." She loved her father dearly.
All right, so that's the other thing about this. Like, yeah, she's going to have to choose to be mortal, but not just mortal. She's got to say goodbye to all her family and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, big deal for Elrond. And then it is time to tell Dad, because now... they're officially dating. do you want to start it?
Sure. When Elrond learned the choice of his daughter, he was silent, though his heart was grieved and found the doom long feared, none the easier to endure. But when Aragorn came again to Rivendell, he called him to him, and he said, "My son, years come when hope will fade, and beyond them little is clear to me. And now a shadow lies between us. Maybe it has been appointed so, that by my loss the kinship of men may be restored. Therefore, though I love you, I say to you, Arwen and Domiel shall not diminish her life's grace for less cause. She shall not be the bridge of any man less than the king of both Gondor and Arnor. To me, then, even our victory can bring only sorrow and parting. but to you, hope of joy for a while. Alas, my son, I fear that to Arwen the doom of men may seem hard at the ending.
Okay. So, what'd you just read?
I feel like there's a couple things. First, it seems like Elrond was maybe bluffing a little bit when he talked to Aragorn last time, when he was like, nope,
well,
not a chance.
Well, when he talked to Aragorn last time, that was 40 years ago.
It's true.
So Aragorn's accomplished a lot more now.
Aragorn has proved himself in some of these trials so far. Elrond seems to have come around to at least the possibility that Arwen would choose mortality and Aragorn over remaining an elf and immortality.
Right.
He's now kind of like, it almost sounds like he knew it all along, or he saw it coming, and he's just sad about it.
Well, he's also, this is, I think it's really key that he's realizing that, oh, you know, the elves' twilight's coming, period, and it's coming quick, period. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, to say his lifetime's weird, but like this Aragorn's lifetime is when it's going to come. Mm-hmm. So, but now he's seeing like, all right, it's going to cost me my daughter, who I'm never going to see again, as I immortally live on across the sea, and she does not.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be a great help and hope to men. But he realizes that he realizes this. He also gives Arwen the choice herself to decide, you know, and now it's like, okay, she's willing to do this, which is sad for me. Like, it hurts me, Elrond, the dad, that she's going to choose this, but I guess I can't stop it. And I want her to make this choice, and she's taking this seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But now he officially also says, okay, well, here's the dowry.
You have to become king of both Gondor and Arnor, and nothing less. Which is,
yeah, definitely,
maybe not as intense as go find me a Cimmerillion, but is a pretty big deal.
Correct. I don't know.
Of epic proportion.
Right, fitting, awesome, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Might even get accomplished.
And then the last bit I think sounds a little bit confusing, but what I understand he's saying is, if we lose this battle, meaning you and I, Aragorn and Elrond, are fighting against Sauron and Mordor, if we lose, the world is kind of destroyed, period. So you don't get Arwen in that case, in part because you're not king of Arnor and Gondor, so you don't have the dowry, but also because the world is ending and the elves are all going to be destroyed.
Yep.
If we do win, you can probably achieve the necessary becoming king of Gondor and Arnor, but I'll be sad when we win because it means that my daughter will leave me.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so then from there, so it stood afterwards between Elrond and Aragorn, and they spoke no more of this matter. But Aragorn went forth again to danger and toil, and while the world darkened and fear fell on Middle-earth, as the power of Sauron grew and the Barad-dûr rose ever taller and stronger, Arwen remained in Rivendell. And when Aragorn was abroad, from afar she watched over him and thought, and in hope she made for him a great and kingly standard, such as only one might display who claimed the lordship of the Numenoreans and the inheritance of Elendil. Where did we see this banner? Or standard, sorry.
Aragorn raised it. Is this when he's camping out?
There might be two times, but I think it's like, I think it's really, really big, and that's also a hint.
Okay, he unfurls it once when he's camping outside of Gondor.
No, I don't think he does it there. No, it's
okay.
Both times would be before.
Before that. Oh. On the ships when he sails in to save the day.
Yeah, so that's the big awesome.
At the Battle of Pelennor Fields.
Yeah. And okay. Then when he summoned the ghosts at the rock, the Black Rock, Eric. He unfurled some sort of standard there, but I don't know if it was as big or what, but because I imagine this one it's like the size of a huge ship sail, you know, like really big. So
That's
my thinking on that one. I think that's a pretty good place to end for the night. Besides that, there's one more time he goes and visits his mom, who's dying of old age. She no longer lives in Rivendell, but I don't know, somewhere else where the Rangers have camps in the north. Aragorn makes one of his many journeys to see her, and you want to take it?
This is our last parting, Estelle, my son. I'm aged by care, even as one of lesser men. And now that it draws near, I cannot face the darkness of our time that gathers upon Middle-earth. I shall leave it soon.
Aragorn tried to comfort her, saying, Yet there may be a light beyond the darkness, and if so, I would have you see it and be glad.
But she answered only with this linad, Anan I Estelle Edain, Uchebin Estelle Anim. I gave hope to the Dunedain, I have kept no hope for myself. Thanks, y'all.